Hello?
How have you been? You alright?
Yep, no problem.
Oh, hello.
Are you alright?
Oh my goodness, I didn't know.
Yeah, of course, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
Can you hear me now?
I can, yes. Hello, yes.
Hello, welcome to Mark Thomas's Lockdown Checkup. I'm Mark Thomas, and this is the first of six podcasts that talks to health and care workers about their lives, work, and changes through this first phase of COVID-19. But let me begin by explaining a little bit about my own situation first. I am talking to you from a small bedroom. It is about 3 metres wide by about 5 metres long. There's room for a bed. There is a brown table with a computer on it. The walls are completely white. It is slightly monastic. This is one of two small bedrooms in a flat in South London where I am in lockdown with my 85-year-old mother. For older listeners, I've described this situation as like being in an episode of Mrs. Steptoe and Son. For younger listeners, I'm 57 and living with my mum. We have not spent this much concentrated time together since I was six and unaware of the concept of familial divorce. My mum is fiercely independent, curmudgeonly and contrarian.
I'm awkward. Yeah, I know that. And Ruth says to me, play nice, mum. And I go, okay, darling, I'll try to be good because I know that I should.
Ruth is my sister who lives round the corner, and she is a vicar and so can testify that my mum has a working vocabulary of profanity that would give the Duke of Edinburgh a run for his money.
They're fucking stupid.
She has a glower that could stop a charging hippo at 50 paces and a temperament that supports its own microclimate.
Mark, you are the most aggravating person there is on the planet.
That was my mum, and I'm thinking of putting her quote on a tour poster. My mum's age puts her in the high-risk category. She's got various conditions and a prescription list that is handled by Eddie Stobart. So when lockdown began, I was scared for what might happen to her. I had a responsibility to her to stop the virus getting into this flat, and I was frightened I would fail her. I was frightened of the suffering and pain that that might cause, and there was more than a dash of guilt involved. So I wanted to find out as much as I could about COVID-19, how it was spreading, what was happening with it, what was happening to the sufferers, what was going to stop it. I read research papers, followed the news, and watched every daily government briefing. My mum, on the other hand, she wanted to watch Flog It and kept complaining that the news kept repeating the story she'd heard earlier in the day and it shouldn't be called the news because there was nothing new on it. In an effort to try and find out more about COVID-19, I started to phone people that I knew who were working as carers or in the NHS as health workers. This very quickly became a network of people that would take turns chatting to me. And I would speak to people nearly every night. And most of them, I think I would now actually very gratefully describe as friends. I think talking to them and the conversations we had about what was happening in their lives and the changes they were facing very quickly became an essential part of my life under lockdown. And this is how this podcast started.
Mark, hey, how are you?
Yeah, no, I'm waiting for a train. It's fine.
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, I'm just, yes, just everything's a bit overwhelming.
Yeah, good. A good week.
I've just had a lovely fight with my knitting and managed to sort out a problem.
Oh my goodness, I didn't realise it was that time.
Like I said, if this is going to help people to understand just how devastating COVID-19 is, then yeah, I'm more than happy.
Of all the stories, ideas and emotions to emerge from these conversations, the feeling and absence of touch kept cropping up. And this is where I've decided to start this first episode. Touch. Skin is the biggest organ in the human body, and touch is perhaps the most fundamental sense. The subject seemed to never be far away from a conversation I had with one of my regulars, Anna. Anna is a hospice nurse, and this conversation took place on her day off after a particularly tiring series of shifts.
You know, I see my parents every day, but I can't give them a hug. I can't do any of the things they need doing. Like, my dad needs a haircut, and I could do that, but I'm not going to because I shouldn't touch him. I have a theory that everybody sort of nurses by proxy. So when you're looking after people, you're looking after people so that someone will look after your people. So I can touch my patients. I can wash them. I can comfort them. You know, I can do things like, you know, wipe someone's tears or help them have a shave or do mouth care for them. And I think I would feel a lot worse if I wasn't able to do that, you know, because I can do that for somebody. I think that gives it a little bit of sort of emotional relief.
For me, living through the coronavirus pandemic has meant that the absence of touch, and in fact, the fear of touch, I think it's made me reappraise just how important it is to us. It simply had not occurred to me before that touch might be crucial to nursing other than, you know, taking a pulse.
I think it's completely instinctive to touch, for instance, new babies, or to touch anybody you think is fragile and to hold them. And I think the really important part of nursing and healthcare and love is just holding people, whether you're holding their hand or whether you're actually holding them.
It was only after talking with Anna that I started thinking about my mum's turning circle. She has mobility issues, and her turning circle is in reality an 8-point turn. It is accompanied by grinding gears and lots of cabby swearing. Instinctively, I go to hold her at the elbow when I see her turning. And I hold her, not, I don't think, to provide any specific balance, but what I'm offering is the prospect of a safety net, the potential of balance. And I'm offering that through touch. My mum interacts with me through touch in a slightly different fashion. One morning, I was making coffee, standing in the corner of the kitchen, lurking by the kettle. I hear a noise, I turn around, and I see a 5'4" great-grandmother in her pyjamas and bed socks, holding out her walking stick pointed directly at me. "Bollocks," she said. "Another couple of seconds and I would have got you." This is George, who works with elderly patients in major trauma. His analysis of touch is slightly less stick-wavy.
I think it's an important part of being a doctor, being able to touch people, not just to examine them, just human contact can make a difference to a consultation and to patient and doctor interactions. But one of the best geriatricians I worked for when I was training, he's a huge man and quite intimidating when you look at him. He's like 7 foot or something. But he used to hold everyone's hand when he was going around, when he was talking to them. And just the process of having some human contact, you could see, you know, I witnessed what it could do to people. It could make people much more relaxed and express themselves better and tell the doctor really what they're worried about.
I love that story. There's something wonderful about a 7-foot man holding someone's hand to find out how they're feeling. And I suppose I like it because it flies in the face of my instinctive reaction, which is if a 7-foot stranger held my hand and said, "How are you feeling?" I'd say, "I'm feeling whatever you want, mate." This is my friend Jackie. She is a London-based GP, and she talks about care, touch, and the diagnostic aspect of it.
I'm quite a tactile person. You know, in normal times, I get a lot of people coming in with stress, mental health problems, and so on. I'm just, without thinking about it, I'll put my hand on their arm, or I even hug people, very, very rarely, and they usually initiate it. But all of that's completely gone. I mean, and so there's a huge loss there because that sort of just lightly putting your hand on somebody's arm and then just leaving it there and then taking it away again, it communicates so much more than you can ever communicate with words, I think. I had a young woman in breast lump. We'd always examine any young woman with a breast lump. And I was wearing gloves when I was examining her. And I was thinking, I can't tell whether she's got a breast lump if I've got my gloves on. Yeah, I mean, if you think about fine touch through plastic gloves, if you've got plastic gloves on, even if they're the thinnest ones, if you try it yourself, you haven't got the same fine touch that you've got if you've just got your fingertips. It's just not the same.
Did you take your gloves off?
I did in the end. Yeah, we talked about it, and I did because I just thought, actually, this is not safe. She obviously had come in wanting a proper examination. So we talked about it. That was fine. And then we talked about, I washed my hands before. Well, I'd washed my hands before I put the gloves on anyway, but I washed them and then I washed them afterwards and whatever.
Were you able to find anything?
I didn't. And it was fine. So it was fine. I couldn't find anything.
One thing I should have explained about my mum is she was a nurse. And if anything happened in our street when I was younger, people used to rush to see her before heading into A&E or to go to the doctor. On more than one occasion, a bottle of Sanatogen wine and a little thank you note appeared on our doorstep. I've actually got this rather lovely photograph of my mum in her 20s in her nurse's uniform. It's one of those black and white photographs. And she stares into the distance, off to one side, looking sort of optimistic into the future. And she actually looks like one of those sort of worker heroes from a Soviet poster. Our time together in lockdown has given me a chance to talk to her again about her nursing experiences. And I think probably one of my favourite stories is how she learnt sign language at school and then used it in the ward with deaf and blind patients. She would take a patient's hand and spell out the letters with her fingers. Taking one of their hands, she might brush her hand upwards along the open palm, H. Then she might touch the tip of their middle finger with her finger, I. Hi. A simple drawing of the letter T on someone's palm would often elicit the words, white, two sugars please, love. I have a person I talk to quite a lot who is a dementia nurse, and I met her 3 years ago when I was researching a show to celebrate the NHS's 70th birthday. Her name is Jules, and she was one of the first people that I called. This is what she says.
I mean, I know from my experiences of nursing in acute that touch is one of the most important forms of communication, actually the most important. You can take someone's hand who's really distressed, who is looking around the room everywhere but you. If you take their hand, they will calm down. 9 times out of 10, someone will calm down. And it's, you know, they might not understand the words you say, but they'll understand your body language and what you're conveying. If it's caring, they'll see that. You know, you can kneel down, you can look in someone's eyes, and holding their hand will get them most of the time to look at you and for you to have that eye contact. You don't need words. You don't need to say words. But, you know, I've sat with somebody who doesn't speak English and just been there, hold their hand, stroke their hand. I think it is difficult if you're wearing gloves. I would probably take my gloves off, to be honest. That would be my decision, to hold someone, because you want to feel the warmth of someone's skin in those end-of-life situations. And I think it also goes back to thinking about having that person's relative there with them, or that main person there with them, and allowing them to do that as well. There are risks, but actually, you know, if you wash your hands, if you take care, really think about what you do, then I think it's an option that should be there.
As I mentioned earlier, one of my other regulars is Anna, who works in a hospice, and she told me this story of one of the loveliest things.
Most people live in partnerships or marriages or whatever, so many, many people would normally have someone sleeping beside them, or at least lying beside them when they're in bed. And if you're in the hospice or in hospital, to be, you know, in your lonely bed, I think is a really hard thing. So just being able to lie next to somebody, really important. And at my hospice, we have something called a cuddle bed, which it looks like a normal bed, a normal hospital bed, but it has special buttons which can make it wider. And beside the normal mattress, you can put in two long, thin slots, which are, they're like slices of mattress. So you can add those at the sides. So it actually makes it to nearly double the width. And that means that the patient can be in the bed, and then people who love them can get on the bed with them and hold them.
I have to confess, I find the idea of a cuddle bed almost unbearably tender, and I think it's possibly my favourite object that gets mentioned in this episode. At this point in the pandemic, one of the things we do know for sure is that isolation, avoiding contact and washing our hands is the best weapon we have to fight the coronavirus. So in theory, we should be able to beat this thing with logic, knowledge, awareness, and acting upon those three things. But these things aren't an option for everyone. One of the people that I speak with is Mike, who's a nurse in a care home for people with dementia. When I first spoke to him, I said, "What kind of people do you have in your care home?" And he said, "People that the other care homes kick out." This is Mike on the difficulties of working in this particular environment.
Wear PPE.
wash your hands, stay 2 meters away. You can't really do that with people with dementia. You know, stay 2 meters away. You know, I've got a man who I care for, who every time he sees me, his face lights up. He's got this thing for me. Don't know why, we've just got this fantastic relationship, and he wants to hug me. How do you say no? No, you can't. He's not going to understand that I can't hug him. He can't, you know, he gets a thrill out of that. You know, he does things with me that he doesn't do with anybody else. You know, like I said, I only have to walk in the room and he sees me and his face lights up. Probably not very professional, but he likes to play fight with me. We'll stand there and pretend to box, you know, or he'll pretend to do karate. So I'll mirror the actions back to him. We're not making any contact, but he loves doing that. He thinks it's hilarious, or he'll chase me. You know, again, it's part of our relationship and it's part of what makes him happy.
Mike's shadow boxing and games of chase seem to be an instinctive response to a patient. And I wanted to know how that spontaneous part of his nursing fitted into the barriered world of COVID-19.
I've got to think about things. There's only one resident that I'll hug. That's it. That's that one man. The other people, I still hold hands with. I wear my rubber gloves. Make sure, you know, to reduce the contact as much as possible. Our home has been fantastic. We lost, I'd say, probably 8 people to COVID. And not one of those people died alone. They all had somebody sat with them, sat next to them, holding their hand. And I'm very proud of all our staff for that. It was such a difficult thing for anyone to do. No one should die alone, ever. And these poor people were so ill. It was such a horrible way to go. You know, absolutely burning up, confused, the relentless coughing. One poor gentleman was just coughing up blood constantly, you know, as his lungs were starting to pack in with it. It's horrible. You just can't get across to people why it's so important we should be social distancing and wearing masks if they actually watch somebody die. And it's not a quick death, it's a slow death. If you watch them die, then yeah, you might have a bit more appreciation for the PPE.
That was Mike, who's a nurse in a care home. One of the things I started to notice in my conversations was that I was always talking to people when they were just finishing or starting a shift, or it was their day off, and they sounded tired or they were trying to de-stress. And I realized that lockdown has brought in this weird sense of time. We've lost our mood calendar for the working week. So I would call people at the most inopportune times. This is Sophie from Liverpool. I managed to catch her as she gets on a train as she's going home from work.
It's just like, it feels like it's never ending, I guess. Now, the first few weeks, it was like, right, we're in this, it's going to finish. And now I think it's sunk in that we're not going to finish. And then we might be like this for months and it's not going to get any better. And you still can't get the families in. And it's awful. It's awful holding someone's hand when they're dying with a glove on and a mask on. I mean, I was really naughty today and I took my glove off because this guy needed to feel skin. I just felt that he needed human contact, like his loved ones weren't there. I was one side of him and I was stroking his face and I thought, in the glove, that's ridiculous. I just felt he needed it. And I thought, what the hell, if I haven't got it now, I'm probably not going to, or I've already had it. So I just thought I should. I hoped it would bring him comfort because I felt so bad for him. I mean, that's the plus side. Our team's really, really bonded because no one else is fucking doing it. So you've got to rely on each other. You've got to give each other hugs. You've got to keep each other going.
Sophie wasn't the only person to confess, well, that they had taken their gloves off. This is Anna, who works in the hospice.
In answer to your main question, I don't think most people would consider touching a patient with a bare hand. Now, we're in theory meant to wear gloves at all times for everything, but I think it's very dehumanising, and I will occasionally take my gloves off and touch somebody's hand so that they actually can feel my touch.
I asked Anna what her manager's reaction was to her holding a patient's hand without full PPE, and she said,
"Let's just say that I don't do it in front of anybody."
The last conversation I'm going to play to you in this episode is with Siobhan. Siobhan is head of nursing at a very big, very well-known hospital. And I started by asking her this.
And I wondered, as head of nursing, when you hear that nurses have taken gloves off to hold patients, what your reaction is to that?
Well, what I would say is a lot of that is for the nurse and for the individual themselves. That's also a bridge to your own coping mechanism. So, and I guess we're in a period when we're not touching anybody, like touch is like the worst thing. Not only not touching them, we're staying 2 meters away from them. And I think when nurses feel that they, I think the circumstance of dying is always, well, not always, in most cases, if it's a tragic situation, it's a really hard emotional thing to, but there's usually family and friends and loved ones near that person that are participating in that dying process. And through COVID, when we've been so restricted in having people be involved in care and trying to protect ourselves that we don't get COVID, is that last bit of human interaction, which is touching someone's hand or having close physical contact, becomes, you know, a big no-no. And actually that might be, clinically that might be fine, but actually in the emotional release of somebody dying, that's a really important part of the process, isn't it? And I would say to nurses, you know, you can touch somebody's hand, you need to go wash your hands after and look after yourself. And nurses were doing that knowing the risk, but that's, I think it's probably looking after their emotional and, you know, psychological well-being to have that touch. That relationship in your nursing is that you hold people with you. And the nurses that take their glove off and hold the hand of a dying person, they will know that moment forever. They will know that person, and that 10 minutes or that act that they did will stay with them. And I think so the ease of holding the hand makes it a better memory, isn't it? That you absolutely did the last best thing you could. And that's quite intrinsic to being a good nurse.
Are there kind of like, I suppose, guidelines and procedural issues that this throws up?
Oh yeah, and quite clearly they will be told not to remove their PPE. When you have a breach in protocol and you don't take your PPE seriously, you're probably going to get sick and you're probably going to get COVID. And so, yeah, you know, from a sensible point of view, I was saying, you know what, you can still hold the hand, you don't need to take your glove off. Keep your glove on, look after yourself. What if that means that you get it and then you're in the bed in 2 weeks' time? You know, I would try to be probably a bit harder and more pragmatic about it. If I was telling nurses in the ITU, I'd say, you know, you have to look after yourself first. You've got a family at home, or have you got someone who loves you, or, you know, do you want to be in that bed? And you know, you do have to probably put a bit of hard reality into them. I mean, I wouldn't go in and say, great, anyone that dies today in your care, make sure you're holding their hand and you take your glove off so you've got skin contact. I probably wouldn't recommend that professionally.
That was Siobhan, who is the head of nursing at a major hospital. And she is our final conversation in this episode. At this point, it's normal for the presenter of a podcast to find some sort of pithy outline, to find the way of bringing together all the themes and strands and producing some little belch of a soundbite that will summate everything. However, all I want to say is thank you. Thank you to all the health and care workers who took time out of their day off to come and talk to me. I greatly appreciate it. The next episode is on protection. I hope you'll join us. And the final thing to say is that this morning, as I was getting this episode together, I was working at the kitchen table, computer open, working on the laptop, concentrating, headphones on, and I felt the prod of a rubber end of a walking stick on the side of my face. Thanks for listening. Mark Thomas's Lockdown Checkup was recorded, written and presented by Mark Thomas. The sound editor was Helen Atkinson. The producers were Nicholas Kent and Susan McNicholas. And the podcast was commissioned by the Wellcome Collection.
All the best, Mark. Take care.
Thanks for the free therapy.
Give your mum a hug from me as well.
Okie doke.
Take care. Bye.
And you, mate.
See you soon. Really nice to talk to you, and look after your mum.